Christian Parenting.
This is Be Love, Do Good Podcast, and I'm your host, Christy Hayes, mama to two, founder of Be Strong Story, and author of the children's book, The Lunchbox Note, a true story of how a lunchbox note that said, be strong, protect the weak, love everyone, changed our life, and created a mission for our family. Join us each week for conversations that inspire our families to live out true compassion, kindness, and what it looks like to be love and do good in our communities. It may take us out of our comfort zones, you guys, but I promise it will put us on a path to see others, love others, and quite possibly change the world. Hey everyone, welcome to Be Love, Do Good Podcast. I'm your host, Christy Hayes, and today we have the director, filmmaker, actress, Christina Zorick, who is on today, and we talk about her new featured film, The New Abolitionist, and where she talks about fighting human trafficking in Southeast Asia and the challenge of rescuing victims and providing aftercare and rehabilitation services. Now, the reason this is so important to me is because I am an executive director of a nonprofit called Unbound Now. I work in their Waco office, and we see this happening all the time. A lot of times we have these misconceptions about what human trafficking is, and so we talk a little bit about that and why it's hard to hear the stories, but also how there can be hope in them and how we can provide hope. I would say if you have little ears, this might be one that you want to skip as we talk about just some heavy topics in here, but I hope that you listen. Christina uses her gift of filmmaking and acting to truly shed a light on something that really a light needs to be shined on. And I just pray that this interview is something that really stirs your heart to the injustices of the world and how you can come alongside and use your gifts and talents and all the thing that God has given you to help others in different situations. So I love this interview, and I think you're going to love it too. Please welcome Christina. Hey, Christina, thanks so much for joining us on Be Love, Do Good Podcast. I'm so excited to talk about your new film, The New Abolitionist, and how that all came about. Obviously, it's dear to my heart. For those who know me, know that I am the executive director of Unbound Now, which is an anti-trafficking organization. So your film dives into this. And so when your publicist reached out, I was like, absolutely, this is going to be such a great combo. And we've already talked about 15 minutes before, and it's going to be great. So thanks for being on.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be considered and also to be a part of the conversation.
Okay, so we could talk so much about all the things, but I kind of want to go back to the beginning so people kind of are like, okay, what is this? Who is this? How does this? Tell me a little bit just about you and how you kind of got into film, and then how, like, what made you do a film about trafficking?
Well, I feel like the sheer grit of what I had to go through, for me, I look back and I go, that's the thing that I look at and I go, really changed my life, basically. I'll start with my origin story, if you don't mind.
Great.
I'm an actress. I've been an actress most of my grown-up life. I've worked with my mother and father in their theater company and did a lot of indies and theater, a lot of voiceovers. Moved to California and then I moved into teaching. I taught acting, and I always wanted to direct, but I didn't have the money to go back to acting school. Directing school, or go to like film school. So I remember telling an ex-boyfriend, I really want to be a filmmaker. And I just didn't, I was always, you know, trying to get the next job as an actress or as a teacher. And I just wasn't in the position to afford that at that point, or thought that I should. So cut to, I ended up taking a teaching job in Los Angeles. A friend of mine had a studio, and one of my students had a Christmas party in 2012, invited me in Hollywood, and I met an anti-trafficker. Her name was Erica Grieve. She had started an NGO called Unlikely Heroes, and she told me her story and another horror story, which I will share. She basically had been working as a nurse in, I don't remember if it was Northern or Southern California, excuse me, and women and children who had been trafficked showed up, and they didn't have the facilities or a system to help them rehabilitate through the level of trauma they were dealing with, which, as we know, is, compared to most of us, so much higher and harder to handle. physically how they're handling it, but also psychologically. So she decided to start her own NGO, building homes for trafficked women and children. And she had already started doing it. And she was basically fundraising and looking for celebrities to help fundraise. And I, at that point, didn't think of myself as a filmmaker. And I said, let me get you cinematographers, directors I know. And I set up all these interviews for her. She met with all of them and they all asked for money. Which is reasonable.
Yeah.
I can't blame them.
Can I back you up just a minute? Like, before you met her, what did you think trafficking was? Did you know about it?
I didn't know it existed.
How did that change after you met her? Because I would say that most people listen to this.
I remembered, I have sense memory in acting, but time, I know, I tell my ex-boyfriend this story and he's like, that sounds weird. I'm like, well, it happened. Literally, time slowed down when I was talking to her. And I felt this sense of destiny. She even said to me, Christina, I feel like we're supposed to do something together. And I was like, I know. Where's my place in this? And so anyway, she met with these. So I knew nothing. Consequently, to this point you're poking at, I reached out to one of my friends who works at HBO Docs, a very high level position. And I told her I was thinking of making this. And she goes, oh yeah, I know this has been going on. I go, really? And she goes, and it was a little after 2012, and I was getting advice about how to shoot and all this. And I realized, like I said to her, you know, Nancy, you're at the top of your field. You know, you see high level content from around the world, the most sophisticated, smart content. I said, but there's a lot of people out there like me who don't have that educational experience day to day in their job, and they don't know what's happening. So I was like, I was basically decided eventually to end up making the movie for me, for people like me who, you know, I thought I was, we always think we're brilliant, you know, everything. And then life just keeps saying, no, humble yourself, realize you don't know about this. And, you know, so this was one of those experiences where I was like, wow, I can't believe this is happening. I didn't know. So cut to what I was talking about. So she basically told me, well, so she met with these people and they all wanted to get paid for their services, basically to shoot fundraising materials, to raise money for the homes, to staff them, to pay for expenses.
Because it's so expensive.
Exactly. So, and that was when I got the idea. She came to me, she goes, Christina, the money has to go, all my money has to go to the women and the children. I said, of course. And that's when I got the idea. This would be a great documentary. At that point, just to educate people, but I remember thinking then it would have to be done as an act of service. It would have to just be done. So at that moment though, I didn't think of myself as a filmmaker, and I still, sometimes I'm like, well, God proved me wrong. I am, because I did this.
Yeah, you did.
But at that point, I didn't think of my identity that way, which interestingly enough served me, because I had such an attachment to acting and my identity as an actress, and I didn't even realize then my ego attachment was strong, because when I went through the process of making a film for the first time, I didn't have any of that. So I would make a mistake. I would humiliate myself. We'd have to fix, you know, and I would just take the blow, humble myself, try to learn from the lesson. Everything that God sent me, I gobbled up, because I was like, okay, God, you're going to help. You know, the way I functioned in the process was very different than as an actress. And I thought, this is a lesson. You know, because I wasn't attached to proving myself as a filmmaker at all. I didn't care about that. That didn't matter to me. What mattered was that I educated people about this issue and had them go on a process of understanding it in the way that I had to go through, which, you know, inspired me. So I don't know if that.
Well, what I'm taking out of that is, can I ask you one thing? I'm going to stop for a second. Do you have bracelets on?
No.
There's something that when you move your arm, it keeps it like shakes.
I'll stop moving my
arms. A ring or a bracelet.
Yes.
Oh, that might be it. There you go. I keep hearing it. I'm like, oh, I know it's something, but I can't figure it out. What I hear you saying, what I love that you're saying, is that through this whole process that you kind of found a bit of yourself in it, and your identity, that all of us, whatever we do, our identity can get attached to, that you were faithful to what God had in front of you. He gave you the resources and the talent to do it. And then because you were doing it for someone else, a greater purpose, a greater thing, then you got blessed because of that. That is what I'm hearing.
And he kept doing something that I always pray with my prayer partner. And there is another verse to back it up. I don't know it by heart, but I found a verse that justifies it. But I would pray, God, please tip your hat. Show me how you're moving in these circumstances. Because I needed that. I needed the encouragement of him showing me that he was approving completely of every step of the way, because I felt so much like dependent on him. And because it was all so new, I needed to feel like encouraged. So, and he did that. We would run out of certain funds and then an opportunity would come just like that. And it was like, I was like, wow, God is doing this so much better than I've ever
done
something in my own strength. It's like, he's so much smarter and so much gentler in the process. It was really interesting. Yeah.
I love that. So kind of take us through that. You decided that you would do this film. What did that look like for you? You talked with her about the stories, you followed some different organizations who were doing this in real time, on the ground, trenches,
right,
where they were helping women who were working and, you know, being trafficked. Tell us a little bit about that experience for you.
Well, basically the same process happened with God that happened with me deciding to make it is, I'll just finish the timeline of what happened next. Yeah. A few years passed after Erica and I met. And I want to say this one story because it's important. This is the story that got me hooked that she told me. She had been to the Philippines, and I'll just say it here. I sometimes leave out certain details, but she basically she didn't tell me the official status, but she said she met with an official. They wrote an edict or some kind of permission on a piece of paper. They got armed guards, and the armed guards walked her into a underground child bordello, and she got rescued. I think it was 10 to 14 year old girls out. And she looked at me and she said, Christina, they knew. And then she said, I would have taken out more, but they were so broken, we couldn't get more. So that hit me so hard on a few levels. Number one, my nieces were around that age at that point. And secondly, they knew. And, you know, it's like I had read a lot of books at this point about trafficking while I was starting to, at that point I hadn't. But later on, I read a lot of books about it and saw movies about it. And I started to piece together what she said, because at that time I didn't quite get it. It's like there is this wall of denial, and we were talking about this earlier, that comes up in us that almost can't process the information. And that was also part of my process, is I had to get out of denial about what this really looked like. The movie was almost my journey towards fighting my denial in a way, not consciously, but unconsciously. How can this be going on in 2012? How can this, you know, so anyway, cut to a few years past. I sold some property in New York, was sitting on a bunch of money. And I was like, what can I do? I put together, you know, the ambitious part of me that loves acting. My mom was going to direct a play. I was the lead. We found it. We had a New York producer interested in it. And a prayer partner and I were on the phone, and she's like, I don't think you're supposed to do this show. I think you're supposed to do the project. You know, you're supposed to do something with trafficking. And I was like, and she reminded me of how, you know, blown away I was about, and how, and so that prayer partner and her witnessing to me really changed the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying I was happy with her at that moment. I was upset.
Yeah.
You know, that selfish part of me wanted to, because, you know, actors, and I'm not judging actors, because that's a calling in a way, to be able to have a life that's so unstable. You have to really, that has to be a purpose in your life. And I believe God purposes and loves artists completely. So I do feel that was a huge part of my purpose. But I just knew when she said it, I'm like, she's right. This is, and I kept saying, the thing that happened to me is, does the world need this play over a project about this? And I couldn't help but answer, of course.
Couldn't shake that.
Yeah. So that put me on the, and basically what happened is we would pray into it. I spent a good chunk of time, and when people ask me, what can I do? I say to them, honestly, I spent a good year in deep prayer, really, really contemplating, going through other options in my mind. Might have not been a full year, but I didn't just flippantly decide. It was a very deliberate decision that I had to make sure was God's will for me, because it's too scary and too hard to start something. I even said to her later on, I said, I think I'm going to make a short. She goes, I'm not getting that from God. I was like, not getting that from God. I can't feature.
You're like, I want a new prayer partner, please.
But that's an interesting thing because, you know, God was using her and still is. And she's a great warrior, amazing woman of God, Sydney Anderson Ward. I love her to death. We've known each other for years. But, you know, we need people around us that challenge us, that don't agree with everything we think. You know, culturally, sometimes I feel like we're in a place where we can't handle that anymore. And we need it.
Yeah, we
need to be in rooms with people who see things a little different and not to be threatened by that. Cause she pushed me on and challenged me. And then the process was slow. She actually got a word. I was supposed to go to this church out here, Expressions 58. And then there, I think I heard about this conference at Agnes Temple that Patricia King, Heidi Baker were at, Katie Souza, Joan Hunter. There was a bunch of like real female generals in the faith there. And it was a wonderful, I can't remember how long it lasted, but there was a video about trafficked children. Mm-hmm. And then it was announced, there was donations taken. And then I found out later on her website that she was planning a trip to do with trafficking. And then I went on that, and that's how it began.
I did that
in 2015. Yeah.
I love how it took some time. So, you know, I think sometimes when we see something that breaks our heart, we either get scared and go, that's too heavy for us. Someone else can do that. That's not my gig. That's what I used to do. I would be like, my gig is this. It's not that. Whereas God really broke me and said, hey, all these things break my heart, actually, Christy. And if you're of me, it should break your heart too. And so that broke your heart, but you didn't just fly into it. You actually had people around you praying. You prayed of how you could use your best gifts and talents to help and to serve. And that's what you did. And so then you decided to go and make the film, and it's done incredibly well and got all these different awards. I'd love to know, what were some of the things as you were making these films, which are very heavy, and when you are working with trafficking victims, as we do all the time, and I think people have this misconception that it's like these girls who are kidnapped and they're held in this basement and it's like Taken or something. And not that it can't be, but like who we work with, and we kind of talked about this, is, you know, kiddos who are vulnerable, who their family has
at risk.
Their family has trafficked them. It's literally a block away from me. It's not millions and millions of miles away from me. It is a block away from me. I just have to know what to look for. And so we kind of talked about that, but I'd love to know just how that changed you, of how, you know, at first you were kind of like in denial of like, how is this really happening? And how did that open your heart for the broken as you continued making this film, and then even after the film was made?
Well, I'm getting emotional because I'm going to say something very honest. I think God created me to be kind of a cockeyed optimist. In my family, every fight, a lot of my fights with my mother, she would be very real and, you know, thinking of all the negative possibilities. And I was always, and that's probably, I mean, I was, you know, I got saved when I was 30 years old. So I think I was always, well, we're picked, right? So God knew what he was doing. But I think about it, and I think if I hadn't had that part of my personality already there, I think the film has frankly balanced me. Mm. Making the film has made me look at the realities of the human spirit in a different way, in a way that I didn't want to confront. I was one of those people who believed anything's possible, any problem can be solved. And And I do now see it differently. I see free will as a huge part of what's possible in our lives. And you can't override free will. Holy Spirit's told me that many, many times when I've tried in other situations besides a movie. You know, if somebody decides they want to be a certain way, you can't override that. Like what Erica said about those girls. That's what's so heartbreaking. That's why prevention and talking about these issues is so important. You know, one thing I learned from these four groups, because I taught acting for many years, I kept looking for structure. I kept saying, okay, how does this work, this battle against it? And what I found is there's a structure. There's rescue, rehabilitation, prevention, mm-hmm. and prosecution. Mm-hmm. And so the preventive work to me is the most, granted, talking about it, praying about it, for people who have a passion, getting involved in groups. We have a What Can I Do page on our website, the new abolitionist doc.com, with the groups that are featured in the film and other groups I've met along the way. You can lend your talents to these groups. You can finance stuff they're doing. You can, one person started a business to employ these women and mm-hmm. children, to give them vocational skills because their families are poor. They can't get past the money. If you can't help them with the money, they can't get past what needs to happen to heal or for them to let go of feeling responsible for their families. So, you know, there's all creative different ways you can kind of be a part of. So obviously, the thing we talked about before, and I sometimes neglect this part, but we have to get to the source of it. We have to have politicians on a national level, international level, local level. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, it's one of the top three criminal industries globally, right? Mm-hmm. Up there with drugs and weapons. If it's that important, why are we not seeing the same level of attention being paid to it in the places where there's a problem, like refugee camps or in schools? Or, you know, there's certain areas where at-risk children and women are targeted. So I just think there's so many different levels of areas to attack. It got me to a place of realizing there is evil in ourselves and in the world at large, in other people, in the atmosphere. And, you know, there's work to be done to grow. And some people don't want to grow. Mm-hmm. They don't want to evolve. They just don't. They'd rather blame and shame this or that as opposed to taking on themselves. I remember before my first trip, I went in 2015 and then again in 2016, I remember being in my apartment and waves of fear just running up and down my body. And I'm saved, sanctified. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm going to church. I'm like, I had to fight through a wall of fear to do this. And I did it. I had horrible migraines at certain times of shooting when I got overwhelmed. It wasn't easy. And the other thing that helped, I think, was that because we were shooting with an interpreter and in another country with another language, a lot of our discoveries about what was actually happened in the edit. So I didn't even know some of the things that were being said to us or by the victims or by people who were talking on camera when we were shooting, you know, undercover. And then when we got the interpreter, I was like, oh my gosh, that's when I really started getting, that's when I started seeing what we actually got and what people revealed. So I think that helped me. A part of me didn't know what was happening.
Right, right, right.
You know, and that was like, it almost like if it was here, it's harder.
Yeah.
Like when I was asked to be a part of this doc feature, Knock, about trafficking in the States, September 2021. That was really difficult interviewing those people mm-hmm. in the room. I remember the whole crew was guys and they started sobbing, you know, from some of these stories of these traffic victims or some of the information we got from these anti-trafficking advocates. And I was just like in the room dogged. Of course, I went home and had a migraine for a week, crying and sobbing about it. But, you know, another kind of reveal about all the denial in this country. And I mean, the crew themselves came on to that shoot in denial that it was happening in the States.
Yeah.
You know, and by the end of it, they're on fire. So yeah.
We get it all the time. We get that all the time. I mean, even when we go into different organizations, even law enforcement, right at the beginning, we started about 11 years ago, they were like, that doesn't happen here. And then when you start to realize that It's kids in poverty, it's kids at risk and vulnerability, and women. Women who they, you know, the women that we serve, they had been trafficked as young children. But what happens now when they turn a certain age is that you forget about all that part. And then you're like, oh, well, they're old enough to make a decision. Well, actually, they had been trafficked. Just no one, there wasn't an outcry, or they didn't know what to do, or that was just who they thought they always be. No one ever came alongside them.
I think this is really important for women to hear, to stop glamorizing that this is something women are doing in their free will. Because I do think that there is a sense in our country somehow that prostitution, or if woman does that, it's something of her free will. And I think that's, if you trace it back, as you just said, they've been trafficked, they've been sexually abused. And I think we have to, Annie says it in the movie about Southeast Asia, but we do it here. We glamorize it. Mm-hmm. We glamorize this person somehow. And I think, you know, America, home of the free and the brave, we want to believe that, okay, this is your choice. But legally, we have to have something set up, because it's not. They've been forced. They've been pressured by their circumstances. They've been manipulated. There's horrible trauma behind it that's happened to them individually, because of poverty, because of abuse, because of addiction, lack of education, lack of resources, ignorance.
Yeah.
Ignorance, yeah. You know?
We've worked for 11 years. We had five offices in Texas that served this past year in 2022. 576 survivors. So that includes minors and adults. And I don't know that there has been one time that we have worked with an adult or we don't see some past abuse, traffic. That's what they thought. You know, even the ones who are like, well, this is my decision. There has been something that no one has come alongside them and said, hey, you don't have to do this. Like, this is not, you know, you do not have to do this. And so I think it's true. We also prosecute, you know, we're trying to help train law enforcement that, you know, what I love about our law enforcement is we don't prosecute the victim.
Yes.
And they were like, hey, once they started, you know, figuring that out and really understanding and being trained on what trafficking is and the trauma behind it and why when people get older, this happens. I mean, it's even in the foster care system. It's so hard for these sweet kids who are teenagers to be fostered. You know, once you get a certain age, it's like, man, it is so hard to find good placement. And, you know, that's one of the things that we do in our home is like the home that we serve these kids 12 to 17 is saying, hey, we want you to feel like you belong, that you are, you know, that you, we want you to be here. We want to accept you and help you on your healing journey. And so it's a lot, but I'd love to hear kind of what, you know, you filmed overseas, but then you got to come back and kind of see what's happening in the States. Did that surprise you when you heard about what was happening here?
Well, let me put a pin in that.
Yep.
I just want to speak to something you said. Daniel in our film, he represents Tamar Center, said to me something smart. He goes, you know, there is, because I kept saying, I don't understand how this is structured. What does this look like? He goes, there are criminal industries, international criminal industries, local mafias and gangs. And then there's freelancers. And I was like, what's a freelancer? And I mean, it seems like a trite term, kind of ugly, but I can't think of a substitution for it, but it's those individual stories of a mother, like when we were doing the interviews of traffic victims in the States for NOC, I interviewed a girl who was trafficked, her mother trafficked her out of the basement in Kansas, and her body started falling apart. She started dying. She was basically a stream of income, or the main stream of income for the family. She was basically put in the basement, and they all lived above her. And, you know, her mom dumped her off at a hospital when she reached of age, because her body was starting to fall apart. She was basically dying. Her system started shutting down. She got put in the foster care system, was abused. And then she ran away at some point from the foster care system, got herself a car, maybe had some kind of job. And was in her car. Her car ran out of gas in Montana at a gas station. Two men who were working there, she begged for their help and assistance. Cut to, ends up being trafficked out of a room above the gas station. She said there were other girls there from around the world. And eventually she escaped. but she had to dig a chip out of her arm. And these are, this is like quote unquote a freelancer, right? And these are also red states, you know? So we're talking, this is not a red blue state. This is the other thing that drives me crazy, is this conversation has to be more evolved. It has to include both sides. Both sides have to care about this issue instead of name calling and finger pointing. It's too big and important to take it to that kind of basement kind of level of handling it. You know what I'm saying? So I tell that story because I think that it's really important. And I also, we talked to a bunch of retired FBI agent and other intelligence officers, and they basically said, Russian cartels, Chinese cartels are some of the biggest international cartels, also Mexican, but there's some Eastern European working with local gangs. So there's these international rings, then there's smaller rings, you know, that are happening. And then there's the freelancers. So it's like, I don't know if you've ever saw the documentary, I thought it was brilliant, called The Keepers. It's about a smaller ring. And I recommend everybody see The Keepers. It's beautifully done. There's also a series on, I think it's Netflix, called True Crime, produced by Brian Grazer and Ron Howard. It's about this stretch and road in Galveston, about where all these women were going missing for decades, or young girls. And it took decades for the police to catch up to it. So I'm really happy to hear that law enforcement, I mean, one of the guys I interviewed was an a state trooper who started an organization to educate other police officers. And he's married to a woman named Allison Phillips. A story came out. This was when we were, you know, interviewing for the doc for NOC. She had been working with the attorney general, and they found a case of an Asian woman who had been trafficked, ended up in the hospital, and she had some of her Johns on the phone. And it turns out some of the guys on her phone were officials. I don't know where they were. The phone went missing a few days later in the investigation. And then Allison got fired after that. So I said to her, I turned off the camera. I said, Allison, it seems to me like at this point, there's a portion of people who are in total denial it's happening in the States. There's another portion of people that know what's happening and are involved. And then there's another portion of people who know and don't know what the heck to do about it.
Right. Or it's too heavy. Like, it's too heavy a burden to bear. Or, like, you know, it's so people ask me all the time. They're like, how do you come home after hearing? And we work with the kids, you know, in the foster care system. We work a lot with the CPS kiddos who have been in the system for a long time. And maybe they were trafficked by their parents. And, you know, we have different people who are just in vulnerable situations, and they have a boyfriend, I'm doing air quotes, who says, I'll provide you with this, be my girlfriend. You know, he's older, they get him to trust them. And then after that, they're stuck, and they're now, you know, being trafficked with their friends or their gang. I mean, it's something that isn't as, you know, I think sometimes when people are like, oh my gosh, it's this big, crazy, outlandish, outrageous things that are happening. There are some of that, but honestly, it is right in our face. We're not looking. We have a phrase that everyone hears me say, and probably they could quote it if people are listening, but it's eyes wide, light shine. And I tell this to my kids every day since they've been in kindergarten. They're in eighth grade now. And it's just like, we're keeping our eyes open. And when we see something, do something. And so our big thing, one of our huge pillars, is the survivor advocacy. So, of course, we're being advocates for survivors, but we're also being prevention and training and awareness so that we can help people see the signs. It's not as, you know, outlandish as maybe we think in our head it is, that it's so far away from us. But it really, for me even, I live literally a half a mile from where some of our victims have been. And it's just, and in rural areas, we work in like rural country communities too. And we work in inner city, you know, it happens everywhere. It's not discriminatory, I guess, is what I want to tell people. It's like, it's not, these big outlandish or it only happens overseas, it literally can be in your backyard and you just aren't paying attention because you don't know.
As Christian parents, there are so many things that we want to teach our kids about God and His love for us. But leading your family in faith can be so overwhelming. What are the most important things to teach and where do we even begin? I'm really excited to tell you about a great resource from Christian Parenting that will make teaching faith at home simple, engaging, and fun. Love God and Love Others is a 4-week family challenge to help you teach your kids the greatest commandment of all time, to love God and to love others. Each week, you're going to focus on loving God with different aspects of who you are, and this bundle includes a few pages on a portion of the Great Commandment to equip you for the week ahead, scriptures and points of truth for your family to reflect on together, and fun challenges to try with your family. This resource is an amazing opportunity for you and your family to grow closer to each other and to God as you learn about His steadfast love for you and as you learn to love Him with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. For more information and to get your copy, head over to cpgive.org. That's cpgive.org. Let's learn to love God and love others well this summer.
I think if we all are honest and say, and maybe, you know, it's entitlement. If you've never been in a moment in your life, and I've had a few moments, even if it's a thought, where you're desperate and you have a great need, that is where this situation lives. Mm-hmm. That's where the part of the psyche where people are because of the region, because I mean, look, for Southeast Asia, where I shot my film and where God opened up, people say to me, one interviewer said, why did you choose to go? I couldn't say I didn't at that right. point.
You couldn't choose not to see it. I had a guy on here say, what changed me is I couldn't choose not to see it. I had seen it and I couldn't look away. Like I couldn't.
But it's not even that. It's not even that. I literally did not choose Southeast Asia. As I said, God chose it for me. Mm. And looking back, I realized we didn't have options elsewhere to go. And we tried when I didn't get the film in 2015, I went, I had my charter trip. I met all these different groups. Some of them are in the film. Most of them are. And then I came back, worked with my producer to get other groups. We couldn't get them because different anti-trafficking groups kind of specialize in different stuff. We wanted to get this one that is really big with prosecution, but legally it was too scary and dangerous for them. Another one does more undercover work. And they all do the kind of four branches that I described, yeah. But they also kind of specialize a little mm-hmm. bit. But we got some brave people who were willing to get on camera. And I'm grateful, but it wasn't something that I was so brilliant I figured out. No, it was what was available and what God made available to me, because I tried all kinds of stuff that didn't end up being in the film, you know. So I think that that's an important part of the experience is if this is a subject matter that you care about, if this is a cause that you love and it's dear to you and it keeps pulling on your heartstrings, then just keep putting it before the Lord and He's going to open up that. He'll give you the divine inspiration. Mm-hmm. He'll give you what resources you have that you can utilize. I really believe in that, because if I had tried to do it the way I did with acting, it wouldn't have worked.
Yeah, I think that's great wisdom to say to our listener. If they have something in their heart that they have heard about that breaks their heart, that they're passionate about, is to pray about it and ask God to give them encounters with that. Find other people who are doing it. You know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Find nonprofits or organizations or your friend who's really involved with, you know, the homeless or trafficking or, you know, all those things that you want to learn more about. Maybe you don't know. Watch your film, you know, those different things. And I think I love that you made this film so much is because I think for specifically trafficking and working in this population, it is so misunderstood. And I think that's the thing too, is like we had talked about earlier is people ask me all the time, like, it's so heavy. How do you work in the heavy all the time? And I will have to say that my office, who works weekly and daily with survivors, I read case files of kids who have had the most trauma-filled experiences that I cannot even fathom. I have children their age. I leave that and it is heavy on me. However, I would say that if you ask my staff what our office is like, they would say there is a lightness of step in our office and a hope-filled place.
But that's, you know what? That's exactly what I, when I went to shoot the film, when I first got to Southeast Asia, some of the anti-trafficking groups that we were with were full of joy, joking. And I remember initially in my spirit, I was like, what is wrong with these people? This is serious subject matter. I judge them. Mm. But then I started getting it. You have to balance. That's the problem with what's happened to these children and women. They don't have that balance. It's only been this in an imbalanced way. So there's even part of the restoration work when we were working with that first anti-trafficking group was reintroducing joy and play to these young people. And when I taught acting, there's a famous improvisation teacher named Viola Spolin, who wrote a great book called Improvisation for the Theater. She worked in the school system in Chicago with poor children, and because she tried to teach them acting and they couldn't learn. So what she literally was one of the founders of improvisation, because she realized they had not had the spirit of joy and play as children because of their circumstances.
Yes.
They needed to learn to act through that spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have to kind of alter this as a human being to those circumstances so that you can, you know, have an achievement. I would also say there's a grace. If it is something you're supposed to do, when the last day of shooting, because, you know, a filmmaker always feels like you got to get more. I didn't know what was on it was me and my cameraman shooting the whole thing. So I didn't know exactly what he got by the end of the film, stuff he went off shoot by himself. So I was like, we got it. We're not done. And then I just felt it the last day, like the grace lifted for shooting. And I'm telling you, I could not leave my hotel room. I was like, oh no, I'm done. I knew it.
Yeah.
So I feel like if you're doing this, it's because if you don't have the grace to do it, don't do it. Because you're supposed to be somewhere else. Because if it's really God's will, He will give you a peace about it to be able to handle it. You know, I do believe that. I do believe that there's being in and out of will. And I don't think you should push the river if that's not what's happening for you.
Yeah. And I think He loves the vulnerable so much is what I've learned. Just He loves the vulnerable. He loves, you know, how many verses do we see in the Bible of Him loving the vulnerable, the broken, the first persons that He goes to and that He wants to hang out with are the broken and the vulnerable. And how if we are truly like being the hands and feet of Jesus, that is where we are to go. I mean, and I think for me, being a mom, two kiddos, you know, we live in a great house. My kids do sport. Like it could be very easily for me to be like, well, this is our life. Like this is just what we do. We're too busy to get out of that. And where I would say to people is like, you have to be in proximity. You know, I can't ask my kids to care about the needs of the world if I never show them the needs of the world. If I'm like, oh man, I can't wait for them to love the world and love the needs of the world. If I never show them, they only know what they know.
But the other part of that, and last week I was watching some TikTok and we know this, we've all heard this, right? I'm off TikTok, but I still get some TikTok stuff.
I mean, there are some great funny videos.
But somebody said something. You only learn outside of your comfort zone. You only grow outside. And I was like, God, so much of life is about being reminded of what we know already. And it changed the course of my week. I started putting myself in situations that were uncomfortable. Like one of the things I've never said this, I think, in any interview, so I want to say it. One of the most beautiful lessons I learned from the slums working there with the trafficked women and children is how I realized I had a fear of poverty. I had a fear of the poor. Every time we got into situations, this fear would come up in me. And what ended up happening, these people were more generous, more giving, more loving, more sweet than most well-off people that I know. I mean, money and comfort does not bring peace. It does not bring joy. It doesn't, we know that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We know it, but we don't know it till we see I can't even tell you, one of the most moving last slum we went into, there was this family sitting around a table And they were all eating and they literally offered me food.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, it broke me. Mm-hmm. I thought, my God, the squalor of, if I'm judging it, if you looked inside this place they call their home, it's shocking.
Yeah.
But the sweetness and the gentleness, mm-hmm. I think we have to stop demonizing and deifying the wrong things in this country. Mm-hmm. Like, we look at wealth or affluence as privileged or gifted. And yes, of course, superficially. But once you have experiences mm-hmm. like that more and more, you realize, wait a minute, this is off, because it's not adding up to what I'm experiencing.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Right. I think you made a good point of, like, we're talking about kind of the things that break our hearts. So make sure, be curious about that. Okay. If something breaks your heart, if you see an injustice and you're like, ooh, that feels too heavy, or that feels too hard, or how could I help with that? Like, I'm just a stay-at-home mom, or I'm just a bank teller, or I'm just, you know, I'm telling you, we have so many volunteers and so many people who give resources to be able to do what we do. I mean, my budget, I get out of budget meetings and I'm like, so overwhelmed, because my biggest thing as executive director is when I get the call for a girl to come in our house that I know is so expensive, I never want to say no to her, ever, whether we have the money, you know, or not. And so people can get involved in a variety of ways. But what I would also say is just what you said, is also be curious of the thing that makes you uncomfortable. So the
yes.
people who make you uncomfortable. I have this conversation all the time. Our school that my kids go to, they go to a private school. We happen to be right by a Salvation Army, tons of homeless. We love the homeless. We used to work with them for years in Colorado. But if you don't know them, if you do not know their story, which is what I found with a variety of issues, people have so many opinions on so many issues and so many things, but they've never actually heard the story or been in relationship with a person. So I always say, now, when someone has a big opinion about some issue or whatever, I say, come talk to me after you are in a friendship with that person. And so with the homeless all the time, we have some really sweet friends who are homeless friends around here, but I'll hear someone say, those people are scary, they're running our, you know, place, we're afraid they're going to come in and do this or that. And I just always have to remind them, I'm like, why don't you go down there and talk to them one day? Why don't you go down there and bring them a coffee and just hear their story, and then make an opinion, you know, then maybe that would change. That changed my life. I used to think certain people were certain ways. I used to work on Capitol Hill and make laws for people that I didn't know anything about them. And now that I'm in the trenches with them and hear their stories and, you know, hear why it is the way it is, my life has completely changed. So I would say, get curious about the thing that breaks your heart, but also get curious about the thing that makes you uncomfortable, or the people that make you uncomfortable.
I read this great book really early on when I was researching before going on the trip with Patricia King, called For His Tears, For Their Tears He Died by Patricia King. And it was all this collection of stories of trafficked children in Southeast Asia. And I mean, it broke me, this book, these individual stories. But one of the stories I'll never forget, I don't remember the detail of it, but I remember this one particular thing. This young girl, I think she was trafficked by her mom. Anyway, somebody smiled at her that worked for this activist group. Literally just smiled lovingly at her, and it changed her. Mm-hmm. And this was before they ended up, that individual came back to help in rescue. And she said she had not experienced that level of generous love and acknowledgement. Crazy. And when we were working, I was working with the homeless on a project here early a few years ago in the middle of my edit. And one of the representatives from the city said the same thing. He said, the problem we're having, LA, because the homeless situation is crazy, but people are no longer treating the homeless like human beings. He said, just treat them like human beings. They're not even, can you imagine what it'd be like not to be treated with like you're a human being anymore, with the common decency and respect? And because there's such a wall of judgment or fear or distance. And I say that right now, and I'm challenged by it. Mm-hmm. I'm realizing I need to do it more. So I know if I'm saying it out loud, it's true for all of us, right?
Right.
We all have a bevy of people that we've stopped doing that, you know? So yeah. I think that book did that for me. I spent a year of self-educating about the subject matter. I mean, one book I threw across my apartment, I was screaming. I called my friend up. I was like, I became like a little bit of a, you know, I said on one interview, I became a nutbag, and my publicists were like, you can't say that. And I'm like, well, it happened. I was like, and to me, a nutbag is somebody who's not being rational about it. But I think that's the problem. This issue brings that out of us. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's so disturbing and upsetting. So tolerating that experience in ourselves and working past it, I think is honest. Yeah. It's honest. It's not, you're not going to have a calm response to this issue.
Yeah.
If you do, something's wrong with you.
Right. It will definitely bring a response. But I also love that as dark as it is, there's a little quote on my computer that my staff put on there. And it's like, as dark as it is, there's always light. And that's kind of where we see us as our organization, but also just as human beings, as Christians, that as dark as it can be in some of those spaces, there is always hope, always, always hope. And if we lose that, that's when we get callous. That's when we stop looking. That's when it gets too hard for us. If we can always know that there's hope, and sometimes we get to be the bringer of that hope, which is so honoring and such a privilege that God would use us to bring just a little bit of hope. I mean, and that little hope could be literally, we have a guy on the corner that we love so much, but just knowing his name and every time I drive by, hey, Melvin, you know, or bringing him a coffee or, you know, but just so many people have lost that human connection.
Humanity.
And some people never, I mean, I think of like the homeless people that I know. When is their name? Who knows their name? When is their name ever called? When does someone look in their eyes and call them their name? Ever.
Yeah.
I mean, think of how much we like to be known and seen and heard. And so just those different things. We could talk forever. But tell us, Christina, how we can get involved with you, how we can watch the film, how our listeners can watch the film, can be a part of your project.
Well, I mean, all the old cliche kind of online stuff. First of all, we're available. We got full cable and satellite coverage. So we're on Apple TV, Amazon, DirecTV, In Demand.
That's AT&T. Amazing, by the way. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, no, I know. I found out, I heard from a friend in the industry. He's like, he found out recently, there was published that 8% of the independent filmmakers actually get distribution. So that was, you know, and by the way, most of the time that I went through that season where we were looking for distributors, there was a part of me that didn't believe it was ever going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, anyway, Dish Network, YouTube Movies, Google Play, Xbox, Vudu, Hoopla, Swank, Ubiquity. There's going to be available in stores, DVDs, Amazon.com, BestBuy.com, BarnesandNoble.com. It should be by the end of April. So you can find it online and buy it, purchase it. I'd also really appreciate, like, I'm trying to create, and we're just at the infant stages of trying to use our social media for the film to kind of be a kind of landing strip for educational purposes, yeah. Just different examples. So sure. Please follow us on Facebook at The New Abolitionist, plural, Instagram at The New Abolitionist. And then also, if you see the film on, go on to Amazon and rate us. Mm. There's a site that industry insiders called IMDb.
Yeah.
So at the bottom of the film's page, you'll see a rating system and you can rate us. And follow us obviously. But I would also encourage people to go to the website again, www.thenewabolitionistdoc.com, to the What Can I Do page, and ultimately contribute to get educated, research the different groups that I've met along the way, the groups that are highlighted in the film. They need our support. They need our love. You can sponsor a child. You can offer your services. You can pray for them. You can go on a trip. You can start a business and partner with them. There's all kinds of different ways you can end up working with them. So I just really encourage and just, let yourself sit with it till God reveals it. Mm-hmm. He'll reveal your purpose in it.
That's good. That's great. And we'll put all that stuff on our show notes as well. But I love this conversation. We could probably talk all day on all the things. But thank you for living in your purpose and reminding us to live in ours. Thanks so much. Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. I hope this really inspired you and motivated you to find the thing that breaks your heart and to do something about it. I encourage you to go to thenewabolitionistdoc.com and you will find where you can watch the documentary as well as learn more about how you can help. You can also go if you're looking for something local or something that you can help out with. You can go to unboundnow.org, and that is the organization that I work with. And we have different offices overseas and also in Texas. So I just want to thank you so much for being love and doing good in your family and in your community. I hope this inspired you, and we'll see you next week. Don't want